Everybody, welcome to the first. It's January 16th, 2024. I'm Ryan Ballingy. Thanks for being here today. Sorry I didn't do a show yesterday on MLK Day. I had intended to, and then just kind of a whole bunch of different things happened and didn't wind up doing it. So, took my son to the Washington Wizards game that day with some friends from his school, and some fellow dads also came. And the Wizards are terrible, if you don't know. And they played the Pistons, who are just as bad, and the Pistons won, which made it all the more unfathomable. Well, that really had nothing to do with it. We also had bad weather here in the area. We haven't really had snow in the D.C. area, like a true snowstorm by any measure, in like 2 years. Last year, I don't even think we had but a quarter of an inch of snow the whole year, which in my lifetime, that's really weird. We used to have, like, every other year, every third or fourth year, you'd have bordering on a blizzard, at least by our standard, you know, 12, 15, 18 inches. And in my kid's lifetime, they might have had one of those ever. And my daughter will be 8 in April. So this has been few and far between. And then this morning, they had school canceled last night because it was pretty icy out there. We came back from the Wizards game, and it was a little bit slippery, a little bit icy out there. And I knew then and there it was going to be game over for school on Tuesday or Wednesday. We get here today, and that happens, and it snowed a little bit more overnight than we expected, so we had a great time. The kids got to go sledding in the yard. We had joined back to the country club that I belong to, Argyle, in the ninth hole. The ninth hole is a beautiful uphill par four, but we go down, sled down it together. Put a video of it on my Instagram and YouTube channels if you're interested in it. It was fun. It was a great time. I hope if you were somewhere where it snowed a decent amount, you got to enjoy it. But next week, be down in Orlando for the PGA show. Until then, we've got this week to get through. And then the golf content world kind of just made things happen in the last few hours. And we get the strange update to the circumstances around Yasser Al-Rumayyan and Jay Monahan and a lawsuit against Rumayyan. Monahan being in Saudi Arabia, so we'll talk about that. And then we will actually start with the friendly news, the good news, and then we'll dig in, and it's a shorter topic, and then we'll dig in a little bit more. The Epson Tour put out their 2024 schedule today. The Epson Tour, for those of you who don't know, is the developmental tour of the LPGA. It's their Korn Ferry Tour. It's been around for 40 years in some fashion, and in the last, I'd say, 5 years, the tour has really grown leaps and bounds. They've gone from, and this is pre-last 5 years, they went from the top five on the money list getting LPGA cards. Now the top 10 get LPGA cards, which is great. The purses have gone up dramatically. Our friends at French Lick Resort were pushing the boundaries of what the max purse is on that tour. They had the highest purse on tour for a couple of years. That's been matched and surpassed now. French Lick is no longer hosting an Epson Tour event. They've taken over the Korn Ferry Tour Championship, which we're excited to partner with them on that. But the Epson Tour is continuing to grow for next year. They have 20 events. They're at $5 million in purse money, so you're playing for $250,000 in average on week. That is pretty darn good from where they've been in the last five. I mean, purses have basically more than doubled in the last 5 years, and close to, tripled in the last 10-ish. But pretty amazing. It's been a pretty big jump for this tour. There's going to be a $400,000 event, the Carlisle event in Arizona, which will move to TPC Scottsdale, not the course that hosts the Phoenix Open. They have 36 there. The other, I want to say it's the Champions course. I can't remember the name of it. But they're going to have that event as kind of their big standout purse event. They're moving the Tour Championship event from LPGA International out to Palm Springs, California. And they're going to move from a dollar system, in terms of determining who gets the cards, to a point system. Standardized points for every event, except the Tour Championship, where there will be 30% more points on offer to the field there. And I think that's a great move. If they can get to a place, not quite like the Korn Ferry Tour, but the Korn Ferry Tour over the years used to have, and basically until last year, they had purses that would vary from event to event because they were trying to operate as though they were attracting different fields and week to week. And that's really not the draw of the Corn Fairy. I mean, you can make better money on the Corn Fairy Tour than ever. The purses are all standardized now, $1 million or $1.5 million. And that's a fair amount of money, right? $180,000 to first place in a regular event. But the point of the Corn Fairy Tour is to get to the PGA Tour. And so having different purses and different first place amounts really kind of jacked with that a little bit. And they went to a standardized point system that has worked better. Now all of the events have the same purse, $1 million. There's no need to change. And I think the Epson Tour can get to a similar place where hopefully 2 or 3 years from now, they will have purses that are standardized at $500,000 across the board until you get to the Tour Championship when maybe that's $800,000 or $1 million, whatever it is. But that's the direction this tour can go and is going. And I hope that there's an opportunity eventually for more cards from the Epson Tour. And I would like to see also a world where there is kind of LPGA U. PGA Tour U has been a huge success in its limited existence. I'd like to see that for collegiate golf as well. I think it would be a great opportunity to build on the momentum that exists in college golf right now on the men's and women's sides. There's a lot of interest in college golf, and it is fairly underserved, and we're going to do our best at Golf News Net to serve it better in 2024 and beyond. We'll have some announcements about that hopefully soon. However, I think in the meanwhile that these strides are great, and it's great for the Epson Tour. It was a cool announcement, very positive to see that. Now, let's shift over to the thing that has loomed over our lives for far too long. Back to Jay Monahan, back to Yasir Omayan, framework agreement, what the heck's going on? So let's start with the update in the negotiation piece of this. According to Sports Business Journal, Josh Carpenter, who has been phenomenal on this subject matter, he has a couple sources telling him that Jay Monahan is currently in Saudi Arabia meeting with Yasir Al-Rumayyan, who, if you do not remember, is the governor of the Public Investment Fund of Saudi Arabia. And they are negotiating over the terms of whatever a definitive agreement would look like between the PGA Tour, DP World Tour, LIV Golf, the PIF, and all that stuff that would ultimately, and potentially Strategic Sports Group, that would ultimately create this for-profit subsidiary of the PGA Tour, a membership organization nonprofit, that would be PGA Tour Enterprises. And there was some report, and I do not remember where it was from, but I do believe it was from, I want to say that James Corrigan in the Telegraph, but please don't hold me to that if I got it wrong. But last week, there was apparently a phone conversation between these two parties, and that's the first time since June that they had spoken to one another on the phone. To me, that is stunning. You would think that these parties would be more engaged than that toward the deadline of their negotiation period. Right? You would think the two principals here, I mean, Yasir Al-Rumayyan is the principal on the Saudi side. I mean, MBS is ultimately the principal. But Yasir Al-Rumayyan is his right-hand guy, right? Runs this fund. And you've got Jay Monahan, who is, I recognize, not the only guy involved here. He's got a board, he's got members, he's got a lot of people. But for them to have not really spoken up until then in 6 months is, frankly, almost 7 months, frankly, staggering. But there are obviously other people involved here doing the negotiations, trying to figure out what's going on. They have agreed to some form of an extension. Clearly, we don't know how long that is, but they have agreed to some form of an extension to find an agreement. And according to Sports Business Journal, the source said that this is believed to be the first time these two have met in person since last summer. So basically, when they did the media tour, they went on CNBC, they did the taped softball interview that they knew they were going to get the softballs, all that stuff. They did that, and then they really haven't spoken since. And it was the London Times. I do not think it was the Telegraph, so it wasn't Corrigan. But the London Times had reported that Monahan and Al-Rumayyan had that phone conversation, basically after the December 31st deadline. So they're going to agreed to extend that. They probably had that conversation in the wake of Keith Pelley, who's the European Tour Group CEO, announcing that he was leaving to become the CEO of Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment on April 2nd, and that he was planning to stick around to see this thing to the end. He wanted to make sure that a definitive agreement could be reached if it was. He was going to represent European Tour Group as best he can. So that's going on. Before that came out, which was the kind of unfortunate bit of timing. I mean, there's nothing that the PGA Tour was doing about that. It's not like they're hiding this news from people one way or the other. This came out through Josh, who, again, great reporter, has done some fantastic stuff in the last year, year and a half on business, golf business, PGA Tour business, sponsor stuff. He's a must follow, must read. And at the same time, there is a report in The Athletic that I don't know how you take it any other way than it could be a complete dagger to the notion that a deal gets done here. So The Athletic comes out, it was earlier in the day, and it's from their soccer side. So a guy named Adam Crafton wrote this story. Headlined, Newcastle chairman Al Romayan faces $74 million lawsuit for, quote, carrying out malicious instructions of Bin Salman. And the story gets into the details of it. Al Romayan, you may know, is the governor of this public investment fund. He is the chairman of LIV Golf. He is also the chairman of Newcastle United, which the Saudis purchased. And some of the people that helped organize that purchase were some of the folks that kind of helped architect the negotiations on the Saudi side of what happened, ultimately leading to that framework agreement. But Al Romayan is being sued for, quote, having carried out the instructions of MBS with the, quote, malicious intent of, quote, harming, silencing, and ultimately destroying, end quote, the family of the country's former intelligence chief, Dr. Syed Al-Habri. And I'm sorry if I did not pronounce that correctly. I've not heard the name pronounced before. The claims were made in legal papers that were dispatched to Al Romayan in multiple locations. St. James Park, which is Newcastle's home stadium, in the second week of January is one of those locations. And the PIF owns 80% of Newcastle United, which is in the English Premier League. And the legal documents were couriered to him also at PIF's headquarters in Saudi Arabia, as well as their locations in New York and London. The Athletic has the exclusive here. The filings were made in a Canadian court, and they were asking for permission for Al Romayan and others to be added to an existing court case and for a new claim to be brought against him and others over these allegations. And the claim that Al-Habri hopes to bring against Al Romayan is that he's alleging that Al Romayan was directly involved in a 3.5-year campaign between June 2017 and January 2021 to pursue the family of Al-Habri, and that he was... let's just go into more depth here. Basically, Al-Habri was the former top aide to Prince Mohammed bin Nayef. He was deposed as heir to the Saudi throne by MBS in a palace coup in 2017. He has been in detention since 2020. Al-Habri is a former intelligence officer. He left Saudi Arabia in 2017, went to Turkey, then to Canada, and that's why he's bringing this suit there. In January 2021, a collection of Saudi state-owned firms alleged in a lawsuit in Canada that Al-Habri had embezzled hundreds of millions of dollars in state funds intended for counterterrorism while working at the Interior Ministry. Al-Habri denies that. PIF is named in the latest papers, along with another PIF board member, Mohammed Al-Sheikh, who are listed as intended co-defendants in these documents if the Canadian court allows it to go through. They would be looking for the Al-Habri family $100 million Canadian dollars, which is approximately $74 million U.S. dollars, in damages. And the claim is, I mean, there's a lot here, to be honest with you. We'll skip down a little bit in the story, but Al-Habri is a guy that's been credited by a number of Western intelligence agencies, kind of the Five Eyes. And they did an interview not too long ago, for first time forever, in 60 Minutes, as a group trying to kind of warn the world about some intelligence things they wanted to bring to light. But he's been a Saudi informant. And he came up in this piece. He's told 60 Minutes that Al-Habri is an honorable man. He has saved American lives. It provided some examples in a piece and said that in 2010, when Al-Qaeda was trying to hide bombs in desktop printers and transport them in two flights to the U.S., that Al-Habri passed along intelligence that helped them find these explosives in a layover in an airport in England and prevent that from happening. His family, Al-Habri's proposed case against Al-Rahman, accuses him and Al-Sheikh that they had direct involvement with a variety of allegations, including taking steps to orchestrate an alleged campaign of, quote, wrongful kidnapping and detention, quote, misappropriation of property, and, quote, the expropriation of companies worth hundreds of millions of dollars into PIF hands. These steps, again, according to The Athletic, the papers allege, were taken for political reasons at the behest of Mohammed bin Salman. And issues between MBS and his family and the Al-Habri family came to light in August 2019 when Al-Habri submitted a 106-page lawsuit in the U.S. where he had alleged that a, quote, hit squad had been dispatched to murder him in Canada in the previous October. So I assume that would be October 2018. In the same month, that's when Jamal Khashoggi was murdered in Istanbul in an embassy there, and that U.S. intelligence ultimately reported that MBS had approved that killing. That I don't know where this leads from here, but this is obviously not very good timing for what's going on here. Not that there was ever good timing, but this isn't good timing, right? And I assume that this comes up at some point. I don't know how it does. I don't know how you bring this up. If you're Jay Monahan, do you just kind of have the talk and just leave, and then you come back to the United States and then figure out what to do after that? I really don't know. But he's over there right now, presumably. And, you know, this is 6 in the evening when we're recording this, so well ahead of us. I mean, it's early tomorrow morning there. What happens? And I don't know. I really don't know. And I'm not entirely sure because I don't have the legal documents in front of me. All of the connection that is trying to be made from Al-Habri and his suit to Al-Rahman directly. And I have to see that to better understand specifically what those accusations are. There is a little bit more from The Athletic here that they want permission to include, obviously, these guys in the lawsuit. This proposed claim alleges that, quote, meetings and discussions took place between July and September 2017 between all three of these folks about, quote, how to create pressure on Al-Habri, end quote. And this further claim in the paper that contributed to his decision to expropriate these 20 companies into the hands of PIF, who could then pursue civil claims against Al-Habri. And that, I don't have the full scope here. I need to read the documents. I need to see that. I really don't know, but part of the documents, there is a claim in a separate Canadian court case with evidence that Al-Rahman was involved in the transfer of the assets to the Public Investment Fund on behalf of MBS. So that, I think that's kind of been out there, that Al-Rahman kind of got into this right-handed position with MBS and got to running PIF because he was willing to do this work on MBS's behalf. And Saudi documents filed in that case show that Al-Sheikh asked Al-Rahman in his role as the governor of PIF to transfer these 20 companies to PIF during this period, and the governor replied with a handwritten approval. Among the seized companies were SkyPrime Aviation, a charter airplane firm, whose jets were later accused of being used in the plot to murder Jamal Khashoggi. There's no suggestion, apparently, that Al-Rahman or Al-Sheikh had any knowledge or personal involvement in that case, in the Khashoggi situation. Another seized company, Alpha Star, is an aviation company whose planes were held, or excuse me, used in 2022 to transport Newcastle United's first team squad to a training camp in Saudi Arabia. These companies appear to have been transferred to PIF under the orders of Al Ramayan, following instruction from MBS, which poses questions about the separation between the state and the Sovereign Wealth Fund. I don't think there really is any, but okay, sure. That's from the Athletic piece. One of the documents filed in a U.S. court case is a memo written by Al Sheikh to the supervisor of PIF, which presumably would be Al Ramayan, even though he's the governor, and labeled at the top as, quote, top secret, not for circulation, and very urgent. That memo, December 27, 2017, instructs the supervisor to, quote, transfer the companies to PIF, and in a follow-up manner, memo reiterates the order, citing the, quote, instructions of the Crown Prince. So, I mean, there's a lot here. Again, you kind of have to see all the documentation, right? You have to kind of see what's actually filed here, what is being connected or attempted to be connected to Al Ramayan, but this is not ideal timing for all of this, especially for Jay Monahan, who seems to be always in the wrong place at the wrong time. I mean, his luck is not great. And now you've got this going on in the background as he's trying to negotiate, presumably in good faith, over all of this stuff. I don't know how you take that. I don't know. I don't know where you go with that from here, but I felt like that was important to kind of relay and dig into a little bit. I wish I had some good analysis for you. This is a complicated thing. It has always been complicated. It's been complicated for years. And for some who have taken the Saudi money and never thought twice about it, this is the complication they choose not to think about. This is the difficulty they choose not to think about. I'll kind of let it speak for itself, I suppose. You can determine your own outcomes. But this thing isn't necessarily going to go away. This Canadian court filing is not going to go anywhere. And on one hand, it will probably have a bigger impact in soccer circles than in golf circles, I think. But it should create pause in golf circles. Even if all of this is just a court war between these two sides, that is a public relations campaign loser, at a minimum. I don't know what you do with that, but it'll be very interesting to see if anything comes out in the next day, two, or three. And you probably won't hear anything while Monahan is in Saudi Arabia, as long as there won't be any word leak about that. But there will probably be some kind of leak about that, is my guess, because this is not ideal at a minimum. So there's that. And that was kind of surprising. So again, I don't have, without the full legal documentation, legal filing, I can't put into context. I will try to find it. I'm not as good at looking for Canadian court system documents as I am U.S. and U.S. state court documents. But we'll give it a shot, see if we can find out. And hopefully if I can find it, I'll bring it to you on tomorrow's show or later on in the week. We do have actual golf to get to. Tomorrow is Wednesday. Getting ready for a big week of tournaments. So the first Korn Ferry Tour event ends tomorrow. One of the two they play in the Bahamas. They've got the Sony Open. You've got the Hilton Grand Vacations Tournament of Champions on the LPGA. You've got the Mitsubishi Electric Classic to start the year on the Champions in Hawaii. You've got the Hero Dubai Desert Classic in the United Arab Emirates. There's a lot. You got the WebEx Player Series, one of the low-key favorite series in golf, set of tournaments in golf. It's on the Challenger PGA Tour of Australasia. And it's a series of events where men and women compete off of different tees, the same course, the same time, for the same prize money. And sometimes, I think three or four different times, women have won. Hannah Green's won. The one particular stop that evades my mind at the moment has been a particularly popular stop for women winning, but that's back this week. It's a fun event to follow. It's because it's different. It's something I wish we would get a little bit more of here, and we really only get to see it in the Scandinavian mixed on the DP World Tour, because the concurrent tournaments that they had with the modest golf event in Northern Ireland, that's gone away. So we're really only going to get that one time this year. I would really like to see it more and more moving forward. So that's why I'm a big fan of the WebEx Player Series events. So we'll talk about a little about that tomorrow. Try to kind of focus on some things related to inside the rope stuff and golf. I will talk a little bit about this tomorrow. Try to preface this if I don't forget. But I do want to talk about this idea of shot clock and pace of playing golf. We haven't really talked about that yet this year. But I thought some comments or a couple one-liners from John Smoltz made me think a little bit about that. So I do want to get that for a few minutes tomorrow. But I'm sure something will happen between now and when we record tomorrow. And we'll see if my kids have a delay of school. My guess is they're going to have a couple-hour delay. So we will be slightly delayed here, and I will try to spare you giving you multiple shows within a 12-hour, 18-hour time span. So we'll try to space it out a little bit. All right. That's going to do it for us today on the show. Thanks so much for listening. I appreciate it. If you want to get a hold of me, ryan@thegolfnewsnet.com. Follow me on wherever on social media. We don't have to detail that every time. And we'll be back tomorrow. Thanks for listening to Two Off the First.